Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Golf Shake Podcast. Very special edition this week where we look ahead to the US Open. I'm joined ably and assisted ably again by Mr. Matt Holbrook. Matt, how the heck are you this week?
I'm all right actually. Weather's good. Sitting here watching the golf. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, a little bit different this week because the tournament's actually already started that we're going to be talking about, which is pretty much my fault for two reasons. One, I'm so busy at the minute, I can't tell you. And two, I've not had any internet all week, which has just been wonderful. But thankfully, the magicians at Sky came around this afternoon and got me back up and running again. And got a new broadband router and all is well in the world of Ryan Russell again. But yeah, I literally cannot tell you how busy the last week's been at work. It's just wall-to-wall lessons and yeah, the good weather's brought everybody out. Dusting off their golf clubs, and yeah, the course has been really, really busy. And I'm pretty sure you'll have seen that down your end, Matt, as well.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like I don't want to be that guy, but the course has just turned. It's just starting to become really tough now. You know, it's the greens are firming up. They're difficult to hold. You miss the fairway, it's not kind of sitting where it's, you know, where it's missing. It's kind of bounding on an extra 10, 15 yards into trouble. So, yeah, but yeah, we can't complain, really, can we?
Not at all. I mean, I haven't played golf at all, but I just haven't had time. But yeah, it'd have been very nice to. I'm looking ahead to Pro-Am I've got next week. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that'll be the next time I play, really. But yeah, I mean, it's been great to see so many people getting out on the golf course this week. Obviously, when a major is coming up, you get lots of conversation around the golf club of things that are going on. I must admit, mate, this week I've watched zero golf. I've pretty much seen no build-up to the US Open other than the fact that LA Country Club looks really, really good. I don't really know much about it, but we'll get into that in a bit. Let's just kind of recap what went on last week. Like I say, I've not seen any of this golf because of, like I say, what's been going on, but amazing to see Dale Whitner win. It's long overdue. What a great player he's been for a long, long time. And, you know, to get over the line at the Scandinavian Mix was really good to see. Did you watch plenty of this, Matt, yourself?
Yeah, do you know what? I actually watched the majority of it on Saturday and Sunday. He's a local lad to me, Dale Whitner. He's from Colchester, so he's about 20 minutes up the road. Yeah. So that was nice to see him get over the line and get his first victory. But I'll be honest, like, he didn't look comfortable in that final round. He almost kept making, he made a lot of mistakes, but to his credit, he bounced back from every one that he made. I think what really helped him was the fact that he had a good, I think he shot a 61 on the Friday. So he was like, I think he was like six shots clear. Going into the weekend, or eight shots clear. But there was just a couple of times on the Sunday where you kind of like, I turned away from the TV and he had like a six shot lead. It's easy for me to say. And then you turn back and he's like, it's a two shot lead. Then it's a five shot lead. Then it's a three shot lead. And he was always in front. Nobody ever caught him. But at one point I couldn't help but think to myself, he's going to mess this up because he's going to be nervous.
Yeah,
but in the end, it was quite comfortable, and it was it was nice to see him.
I'm sure he was worried as well, and I mean, it's not easy to win at anything, let alone a DP World Tour event, and let alone your first DP World Tour event. I mean, it's you know how hard it is winning a monthly medal. Do you know what I mean? Let alone something of that caliber and with that many people watching, and you know those eyes are on you all the time and everyone's expecting you to mess up because you've never done it before. Do you know what I mean? But
it's
monkey's off his back now. So hopefully he'll go on and perform well and hopefully win again and hopefully very, very soon. So, I mean, it'll obviously rack up a load of points for, you know, the end of season race to Dubai and pretty much guarantees he keeps his card and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, all those things that come with that and also the sort of exemptions you get for the next couple of years out on the tour as well. So yeah, it's just made his life a hell of a lot more comfortable, which is obviously great to see.
There was a few good performances from a few of the ladies playing as well. It was good to see Anne Van Damme playing well again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what a golf swing that lady's got. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to watch her play like live and follow her around, and she is so impressive. And I just don't know how she doesn't win all the time, because,
well, do you know, she's got no, she's up until now, I mean, I don't know what, if anything changes now because of her finish this week, but she's got no tour card.
Yeah.
She gave up the Ladies European Tour card to go over to the LPGA. It's not quite worked out for her, so she's not retained her card there, which means she's now kind of in this limbo period where she hasn't really got a card, which is crazy to think how talented she is. So who knows what's going to happen now for the rest of the year for her.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully she just builds on this, really. But, yeah, I mean, Yannick Paul again up there, performed fantastically well. You know, he kind of leapt out the blocks pretty quickly and was leading. And again, you know, it was one of those I was thinking, do I put a couple of quid on Yannick Paul? Because he's been playing quite well over the last few weeks. And, you know, it'd have been a good each way bet in the end. But, you know, I thought after that first round, I thought he might go ahead and win it. But, I mean, it just looks like a really good golf course over there. Norrin, obviously hosting the event as well, which was great to see. Great to see Annika playing as well. And just so much good comes out of that Scandinavian mixed tournament, doesn't it, really?
The course actually for me was what I really took away from it. I thought the course looked incredible. And actually you see a lot of the players on social media, and, you know, I was listening to the Sky Sports Golf podcast earlier this week. They had Ollie Wilson on, and he was waxing lyrical about the golf course. He said it's, you know, almost kind of Loch Lomondy feel to it, with you know, a bit of links thrown in. He said, yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it did look really, really good. And then opposite to that, so when we went over to the PGA Tour, we got another fantastic tournament as well, seeing obviously Nick Taylor win his home country, and what scenes we saw on the 18th green there. We'll get to the spear tackle in a minute, but obviously great to watch him hole that really long putt as well. Felt very sorry for Tommy Fleetwood, because I thought he was great all day. Probably didn't play that 18th hole as he would have liked in regulation. And then obviously Taylor's just holed an absolute bomb, hasn't he, in the playoffs. So.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of them ones for me where I invested so much time into watching it, I really could have done with not. I could have done with not staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning to watch it finish. But like when it comes to players, and when it's, you know, somebody that you'd really like to see win, like in Tommy Fleetwood, I was like, okay, I'll watch. And then you get one hole into the playoff and you think, all right, I really should be going to bed now. But I'm sure something could happen in the next hole, and it's like two holes in, three holes in. And at that point, you're kind of so invested, you can't not switch off. So I'm glad I stayed up. I paid for it on Monday, but I'm glad I stayed up and watched, because it was a pretty incredible finish. A good, you know, a nice way to win a golf tournament, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really good. And you know, it's, I think, a good omen to see Tommy trending that way. I mean, it would have been great to see him win, because again, we talk about Whitnall's monkey off his back. Tommy winning on the PGA Tour is another one of those, and we'd love to see that disappear, you know what I mean, and him get over the line in a tournament in America. Who knows, it might be this week, you never know, but we'll get on to the US Open in a second. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously playing some great golf, Tommy, and I think, unfortunately, everyone other than his fellow countrymen that were there were probably rooting for Tommy to win. I mean, everyone else in Canada was you know, well behind Nick Taylor. So, I mean, it must have been quite tough playing in those conditions for him as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I'm sure he doesn't take that personally. I'm sure if it was the other way around, it would.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
I'm sure he doesn't. He's that sort of guy. He just.
No, yeah, he's a good lad.
Such a nice guy, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure his time will come, and hopefully it won't be in the too distant future. But right, before we get on to the US Open then, Matt, so that's obviously the big talking point this week, but some news that broke literally minutes after we finished the podcast last week was about the merger between, basically all of golf coming back together again, wasn't it? Yeah, so
yeah.
Major tours and everyone kind of being a bit blindsided by it, I suppose, as well. So it seems like some of the players on the PGA Tour had absolutely no idea what was going on until they actually got told. Would it have been last Tuesday? Was it last Monday, wasn't it?
Tuesday, I think.
But, yeah, it just seems like a pretty crazy turn of events and something that not a lot of people saw coming. I mean, I think it's what everyone's wanted for a while, but it, you know, didn't necessarily look like it was on the cards, did it?
It was a complete bolt out of the blue. I was shocked. So when I actually left you and I headed over to where I was meeting a colleague at a hotel, and I literally turned up and he said, "Have you seen the news? Have you seen it?" I was like, "No, wait." And he showed me his phone, and I genuinely thought it was a joke. I thought it was a meme that someone had made and that had just posted online, and it was kind of doing the rounds. And then it wasn't until I got the pop-up on the BBC, to say that there's much. And then, you know, and then my phone was just ping, 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 ping. One of my mates called me and said, "What's going on? What's going on?" I was like, "I don't know." Asking me lots of questions that I didn't know the answer to. And I think at the time, I think nobody knew the answer to.
I'm not sure they do now. I mean, we're
over. No, I don't think they do.
I really don't think anyone knows kind of what that's going to look like. And certainly for the players, particularly who, inverted commas, stayed loyal to the PGA Tour. I mean, I think loyal is a bit of a weird word, but yeah, I mean, those that didn't go and play on LIV obviously feel aggrieved that they could have taken a load of money and didn't do that, and were kind of assured by the PGA Tour that that was the right decision to make. And, it, you know, I can see there being something that comes back from that, unless the Saudis find some money from somewhere to kind of compensate these guys who got offered to go across to LIV. I don't know.
Well, but I think
that's what's rumoured, isn't it?
I mean, it will all come out in the wash. I think there's still so much more that we need to kind of understand and we need to learn. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, I see lots of people on social media that, "Oh, does this mean, you know, that the European guys can play in the Ryder Cup?" And, you know, this is not really going to all fall into place until the back end of this year. Yeah. As far as I'm aware, the Ryder Cup will remain the same. And, you know, as the time's gone on, you know, there's still so many kind of unanswered questions, like you say, about the compensation. You watch press conferences from, you know, Rory and John Rahm have been quite interesting in particular this week. You know, John Rahm said that he understands the secrecy, but he doesn't like it. You know, Rory's, you know, he's obviously been a bit of a cheerleader and spokesperson for the PGA Tour. And it's almost kind of going against everything that he's kind of been saying and sticking up for. I think long term it's the right thing, but it's almost just the way it's happened that I think people have got, people have got to come to terms with a little bit. And who knows? I mean, look, I've not been the biggest fan of LIV, not because of what's happened. It's more so not because of how it happened or what's physically happened, but I hated what it had done to golf, in the sense of we've got this divide amongst players, amongst events, amongst fans. You know, there's a lot of strong opinions one way or another. And deep down, I'm glad that that's all hopefully going to come to an end, and we can kind of all move on. I mean, look, I'm sitting here now watching the US Open, and I'm looking at Bryson DeChambeau on a leaderboard, and I've missed watching him play golf.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I've seen Brooks Koepka. You know, I know these guys played in the PGA recently, but, you know, I miss watching these guys. You know, I genuinely do. There's some that I don't. I'm not going to lie. There's some, but there are some. You know, that I generally do. I think there's going to be some that, regardless of what happens, won't really come out of this looking the best. But yeah, well, mate, it's still, as you say, it's still all up in the air. No one's got the answers. No one knows what it's going to look like.
I mean, it can only be good that we're going to hopefully see the best players playing in the best events. And, you know, things like the Players' Championship this year just didn't seem the same. And, you know, stuff like that where, particularly like Cam Smith, what couldn't defend the title that he'd won last year. Do you know what I mean? I just thought that was a bit odd. And I know you don't really watch Liv and haven't done. I've watched quite a bit of it, and I actually quite like it. I'm not a big fan of the whole team element. I think it's a bit weird in golf, but who knows, that might take off and might, it looks like that's not going to go anywhere under this new merger that we've got. So we might see some good sort of team elements to golf now, rather than it just being a purely individual sport all the time. And us looking forward to the Ryder Cup every couple of years and the President's Cup every few years. I mean, it hopefully we'll have a bit more of a kind of team and franchise feel to it, and hopefully some of these stupid names of the teams that we've got at the minute just disappear. Who knows? It's just such a huge question mark, isn't it? But like I said, all of us as golf fans just want to see the best players playing in the best events and shooting good scores, and that looks like what we're going to get. I mean, you just hope that the guys all come to some sort of agreement and no one's too aggrieved. And I felt a little bit sorry for McIlroy when the news first broke, because they've almost like shoved him out in front of the media for the last 8 months to try and defend the PGA Tour, and he just looked a little bit stupid, I think, when this happened. But he seems all right with it at the minute. I still think there's bits that he's obviously not letting on, and he won't do, will he? Because he's that sort of, you know, he's a professional sort of person. He's not going to go slagging anybody off. No. So, we'll see. I don't know. I think it's good, but you know, it doesn't look like, you know, the Live circuit's going anywhere. It looks like they've got tournaments booked in already for next year and looking into the year after. So we'll see how it evolves. I'm pretty sure we're going to see golf in the news for good reasons coming up, with, you know, new events being planned and new sort of formats for the game and new kind of audiences being brought in for it, and hopefully new investment as well to get more people playing and watching the game. So, yeah, I think overall it'll be a good thing.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
It's also great to see some people like Brandel Chamblee have to kind of choke on their own words a little bit as well. So I will add that, because, I mean, I don't know about you, but he absolutely does my head in.
Do you know what? I'll be honest, he's not someone I see too much of.
I think we're lucky in this country that we don't see much of that coverage over there. But, I obviously see stuff that him and Paul McGinley talk about, and I've got a lot of time for Paul McGinley because of how unbelievable a golfer and Ryder Cup captain he's been. But some of the absolute drivel that they talk about over there is just unwatchable rubbish, really. But
yeah,
hopefully that all finishes and we see some great golf, and that's all any of us want to see. But again, we'd throw it open to you guys listening. That if you got any opinions on this, do you think it's good for golf? Do you think it's bad for golf? Are you not really bothered? Some people absolutely aren't, but yeah, I mean, it'd be good to hear that as well. So, yeah, you can drop us a line on all the usual social channels, and obviously info@golfshake.com if you want to email us about it as well. But let's get on to the US Open then, Matt, right?
So let's get on to that.
Like I said at the start, it's very unusual that the tournament that we're going to talk about has already started, so we can talk about some of the early progress people have made. And we'll start with your man, Ricky Fowler, yeah? And I mean, he's just shot 62, 8 under par, first round. We've got Xander Schauffele out on the course, currently at 8 under par as well.
Literally, as we speak, he's teeing off on the, so this is the ninth hole, he's 18th.
Yeah.
Which is, I think he's playing about 186-yard par 3. And he's just hit it right over the flag.
I asked you before this podcast, you said you've been watching it since 3 o'clock this afternoon. I mean, who has time to do that? It's been my day off today, you know, and I still haven't seen a single shot all day. So
I actually managed to hit some balls today as well. I've got a 36 hole competition tomorrow. So I had to go and hit some balls today. But yeah, look, it's been an interesting start, right? Because all the talk in the run up to this event was, you know, the length for some of the holes, in particular a couple of the par threes. I posted something on my Instagram actually earlier this week about two of the par threes in particular, which are like 286 and 290 yards. And it turns out that if you're American, you don't mind length, and actually you defend length.
I think it's relative, because I think as much as I think that distance for a par three is stupid, it's all relative to the elevation that you're playing it at, the temperature you're playing it at, 282 yards can play like 220 for these guys. Do you know what I mean? So it's
yeah. Not... I mean, look, they were hitting woods into that green today.
Yeah.
You know, which is a rarity for, you know, the guys on tour, but they are the best players in the world. But
well, I was going to say that, but then, you know, I play with guys in pro-ams on you know, holes that are 150 and 160 yards and they're hitting fairway woods in. Do you know what I mean? So it, for me, that's the same.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are a lot better. So it's all relative. Yeah, I don't think we need to be having par threes at every event that are nearly 300 yards. I don't. But I see why they do it at the US Open, because it's generally like concrete and it's generally red hot. And do you know what I mean? It's not us playing a 280-odd-yard hole in this country on, you know, softer ground conditions and all that kind of stuff, even though at the minute this country's turning into concrete. But yeah, I mean, it generally play like that, does it? Some places in the US, they play a lot shorter. And yeah, I'm pretty sure, even though this golf course, I've not actually looked at the yardage of the entire golf course. Do you know that, Matt?
It's seven... it's long, but it's a par 70.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like 7,300 or something par 70, which is really long. But, you know, it probably doesn't play like that to these. I was listening to Scottie Scheffler yesterday basically saying on the front nine that it was very, very gettable. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of short holes where you're just wedging it in. And then kind of holes, he said something like 11 to 17 are really tough.
So obviously it depends on the wind, but I think half the issue is that traditionally US Open setups are really tough. Yeah. So they, you know, the greens at the moment don't seem like they're absolutely crazy. I'm sure they've got some, you know, they're real. I'm
just watching highlights of Fowler's round now, and he's literally spinning it into every green. Now, if they're doing that on Sunday, I would be extremely surprised, because I think they're going to let these dry out and bake and just be very, very crusty and tough to stop the ball on, really, by the end of the week. And the rough looks insane. I mean, we get to tournaments like this. You know, the PGA was the same, wasn't it, in the run-up to it, where people drop balls in the rough and look how deep they fall down in it. But that's what you expect. These guys are supposed to be really good. So
yeah. I think it was the combination. What people were almost not looking for. I know there are some people that you know, want to see the toughest test, and, you know, if plus eight was winning, they wouldn't have an issue with it. You know, it's almost like people either want, I think some people either want plus eight to win, or some people want minus 20 to win. Like, you can have something in between. Like, it doesn't have to be super, super tough, but it also doesn't have to be an absolute birdie fest. I don't think the US Open organisers are going to be happy that two guys have shot 8-under in the first round. Having said that, they are currently 5 shots better than anybody else. So it's not like
But then you've got the likes of half the field hadn't teed off. Do you know what I mean?
I understand that.
Likes of Koepka, McIlroy, that are just going out, Mickelson, these guys are more than capable of shooting some really low ones, right?
Yes. It is going to be interesting to see what the afternoon starters do. I mean, look, it is a top-heavy leaderboard, right? The Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler. You know, but it is just the fact that those two in Fowler and Xander Schauffele are 5 shots, and Xander's got a putt to go to 9-under. So it's the fact that those guys are 5 shots clear of anybody else. And it's not just like anybody else is, you know, they're anybody else is in Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, still, you know, the best players in the world. I think what's more interesting is you look at the other end of the leaderboard, there are some names that, you know, but there's, you know, plus sixes, plus sevens, there's a couple, you know, plus nine is the worst score at the moment, Aaron Wise. So everybody out there at the moment has broken 80. I won't expect those scores to stay that low for the rest of the week, I'm sure.
No, I reckon there'll be a fair few scores in the 80s this week, definitely.
So. Yeah, there will come at the end of the week. There will be. So, you know, it's good that certain people are putting themselves in good positions. And I know you can't win it on a Thursday, but you can certainly lose it on a Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to come back from plus nine to win the US Open after one round when people are shooting eight under, are you? But, I would love to see Fowler. I'd love to see Fowler win it. I really would. But
yeah,
hopefully he hasn't peaked too early, and hopefully he can keep shooting good scores. And yeah, certainly be in the mix on Sunday would be wonderful. I mean, who knows? Yeah. He might run away and win it. He might shoot 4 8-unders. You never know, do you? But,
well, yeah, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, they certainly have. And he's been knocking on the door for a while and looking like his game's somewhere near, isn't he? And
well, I keep calling him out every week.
Yeah, I hope he does really well. I mean,
I would have called him out this week, by the way. Just saying.
Right. Well, let's have a chat about that then. So let's have a chat about sort of who we're going to tip for this. I mean, it's easy to say now. There's some hindsight in there in the fact that we've seen how some people are getting on already. So it's maybe not that fair. But I mean, I before this happened, I was kind of thinking. Fowler would have been one that I was thinking about putting some money on. I didn't in the end. I absolutely bottled it. I'm not gonna deny that. But I ended up putting DeChambeau, Mickelson, Fleetwood, Koepka, and I put a little bit of money on the man everyone loves to hate, Patrick Reed, as well.
Yeah, he's not had the best start. I'll be honest. I know it's easy to say because he's shot 300 the first round, but I couldn't look past Scottie Scheffler. He's just playing so well.
Yeah.
As I'm saying that, Scheffler's just had a 28 foot putt on his last hole to shoot, to potentially shoot 61, and he's left it about 5 foot short. So he's going to have a little, one of them little knee knockers. Yeah. But you know, I'll be honest, I didn't know too much about the course. I thought it would be firm, fast. I thought the rough would be thick, the greens would be fast, the length, and I generally thought it would be a bloodbath, but you know, it's not really been the case at the moment. The course looks okay to the eye. It looks, you know, looks quite entertaining, looks quite fun.
That looks great. I mean,
not too sure about the high rise. I'm Mick expecting to see
earlier in the week that it's one of the best courses in America. So
yeah, it's a bit odd how it's kind of like in the middle of the town, yep. And you can see some of the high rise buildings behind some of the greens. Just a bit strange. It's just not what you're used to seeing. But yeah, I'm just looking through the leaderboard actually as. Schofield holds his putt, so he's shot 8-under as well. I'm looking at Victor Hovland, for example, who was 4-over. He was 3-over through 5, and he's battled back to 1-under, which is good to see.
The other person that I was going to put an each way bet on earlier was Ryo Ishikawa, because he was 250-1.
Yeah.
And I've just seen he shot 1-under first round as well, so I'm kicking myself now.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'll be honest.
What a good golfer he is.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Tyrrell Hatton was the one for me that I kind of earmarked before. I just felt like he's just been solid for as long as you can remember. I feel like he's, you know, just had a really steady season. But he shot 4-over.
That's not like him. He won't be
the first round. No,
I think but, you know, it's interesting to see what McIlroy does today. You know, so I mean, everything I've read so far this week, everyone said that someone who draws the ball, this is a perfect golf course for someone who hits a draw. So, hopefully someone like McIlroy will do well. Just seen Hovland put out on 18, shooting 1-under again. He was another person that I thought was probably worth a bit of a flutter. Didn't in the end. Rahm again. I mean, you can't count that guy out. It looks like he's going to shoot level par. I can't actually see what he's just finished with. But
I think Rahm finished on 1-under.
Did he?
Yeah. But do you know what? Even though it's going to sound crazy, because even though that's 7 shots back after the first round, I actually think that's pretty decent.
Oh,
and I think when you know, when we're sitting there on Sunday night watching
like,
the...
Like you say, I mean, you can play yourself out of it on the first day.
Yeah.
If you shoot four over, it's a long way back, and one under is right in the mix. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely is.
As much as we say Ricky could shoot 4-8 unders, he's probably not going to, because the course is going to get harder and trickier as the week goes on. And you know, the US Opens in the past, we've seen level par and even over par win them, even though people go low on the first round, you know what I mean? So it's still going to be a tough ask for him to keep that up. But, yeah, who knows? I mean, he's obviously got the game. He's a Ryder Cup player. He's a multiple winner on the PGA Tour, Ricky Fowler, and who knows?
Just looking, Schauffele's 8-under was bogey free, whereas Ricky Fowler had two bogeys in his.
Nice. I mean,
10 birdies.
That's a very clean card for Schauffele, and yeah, a very impressive 10 birdies for Ricky. That's very, very good. I mean, Brooks is the man as well, I think. You know, after winning the PGA, you'd be hard pushed not to put money on Brooks Koepka, because he's just so damn good, isn't he? And he seems to just be, you know, right back where
he's got his swag back, hasn't he?
Oh, he has. He looks like, you know, almost that. Doesn't care at all about where he is and what he's doing, just literally walks nonchalantly past everyone and just bombs it. And he's still giving it all that, I don't practice and I don't really care about golf other than majors. And I love that about him. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Whether it's the truth or not, I don't know. But
I would love it more if it was true. And the thing is, he can't keep saying that now, because we've all seen the Netflix documentary where he was grinding his ass off in his front room with his putting coach. Do you know what I mean? So...
Yeah, but I mean, when you're that desperate and don't know what's going on, you never know, do you? But
yeah, I trust me, I know.
But yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, it's obviously very difficult to pick a major winner because of the pressure and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of golf to be played between now and Sunday, and who knows how that's going to go. Well, what about this next week for you then, Matt? What have you got planned? What have you been up to in the last week? Have you played loads of golf as well?
I have. So when I left you on Tuesday last week, on the Wednesday, I actually played a fair bit of golf. So I stopped at Outon Hall, Q Hotel was Outon Hall, and hit some balls there and played a few holes on Wednesday morning, and then stopped for a game on... Wednesday afternoon on my way home, actually, and that was pretty good. I shot five over that afternoon with, four birdies. I was really, really pleased with how I played. To be honest, this week's just been practicing ready for tomorrow, so I've got another a county Order of Merit event tomorrow, 36 holes at Alborough, which is a pretty tough course, to be honest, Alborough.
Is it, yeah?
Yeah, it is. It's an old fashioned par 68.
Oh wow!
There's no par fives.
Okay.
12 of the 14 par fours over 400 yards. So a lot of free irons, trying to get them running, because it will be dry and it will be fiery. Last year in the second round I shot 11 over, but it was worth 5 over for handicap. So goes to show how difficult it plays there.
Very good. Well, best of luck in that. But yeah, I mean, I was at Alton Hall as well this week. So they've just had a new range put in there. So I went down on Sunday, met up with Simon Dyson and Carly Booth, who were doing some stuff up there for the launch of the new Academy and new Trackman range. So I got to do a bit of an interview with them. We hit some shots on the Trackman. We talked a little bit about their careers, but also kind of how technology has influenced their practice, how they go about their practice routines and all that kind of stuff. So we've got a video coming up on the Golf Shape YouTube channel that will show you everything we got on, that we did that day, really. So it will show you the interview that we did, the shots we hit on the range, a little bit of a brief look at Alton Hall in terms of kind of the hotel. We kind of looked in the restaurant a little bit, as well as obviously the golf course, which has got 27 holes, which Matt said he's obviously played this week as well. But later on in the year, we're going to be doing a more in-depth kind of resort review there. So me and Tom were there on Sunday, had a bit of a recce and a bit of a look round. But yeah, I mean, just up at the academy, it was great to see there were so many people there. It was really busy all day long. There was kind of like a constant flow of people. They had like an ice cream stall and a barbecue going on outside. It was absolutely boiling. There was loads of kids up there and families hitting balls and playing. I took my two up there as well. So they were really excited. They got to hit some shots with Carly and Simon, and particularly my little girl was very excited about hitting some shots with Carly Booth, and she did, and Carly spent some time with her, which was absolutely fantastic. I'm hoping we can get those two at some point on the podcast to have a bit of a chat about their golf and kind of how they go about practicing and playing, but also a bit about their careers and what's going on in their lives off the golf course as well, just to sort of give you a bit more of an insight. But yeah, I mean, it was fantastic to spend some time with them, and something that I'd absolutely love to do a bit more of in the future, because they were really, really a pleasure to kind of interview, speak to, and sort of see how they play. Particularly, you know, watching Simon hit balls was very impressive. He's obviously a 6-time winner on the DP World Tour, which is wonderful. He's won 3 times in Holland at the KLM Open as well. So he obviously likes playing in Holland. We got into bit of a discussion about that as well, but yeah, you can check that out on the Golf Shape YouTube channel in the very near future. Tom's in the process of editing it now, so it shouldn't be too long before we see it. But what did you make of Alton Hall, Matt?
Yeah, so I was really impressed with it as a venue, to be honest. It's as I have been with the other Q hotel places that I visited. So what I found was, let me get this right. So there's 27 holes on the course first. With the 27 holes, what I found was because holes 1 to 18, I felt were quite tree lined, a lot of dog legs off the tees, which I don't mind to a degree. It was a nice test, a good test of golf. And then I felt like as you got to the, in theory, holes 19 to 27, as they call it, it opened up a little bit more, and there was some more views. You felt like you could almost open your shoulders a little bit more off the tee. And I enjoyed
A couple of those like back-to-back par fives that you play there. So
yes.
Got, like the, is it like the hole 20 and 21, isn't it? So
yes.
You kind of come back to yourself. They're very gettable par fives, really. That you don't,
they are.
Like you say, you don't really have to hit it that straight off the tee.
No. But it was the elevation changes as well, which I'll be honest, like I wasn't expecting. Even on some of the holes where kind of like the tee box and the green were maybe on the same level, but the hole would drop down slightly and then raise back up again. But those two par fives in particular were back, and I actually really enjoyed, I think it's technically the hardest hole on that final loop, if you like. I think it's like the
26, is it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's not the longest par four.
Oh, right, okay.
But it's from a raised tee box, so you have to kind of walk down a little bit to see the fairway, but you can see like the town in the distance. And so you've got the water, you've got some bunkers on the left, but the fairway kind of pinches in a little bit, so you can't really hit driver because I think you're going to be getting too close to the water. So you lay back a little bit and hit a four.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, straight before you play the par three, it's got like a pond before the
grip. Yeah. So you know that for me, it was like a.
I think that's like it kind 20, of 24. Yeah, it would be 24.
Yeah, it was quite close to the end.
It sort of runs down and, parallel with the road, doesn't it? Down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was just, you know, it was nice. It was a nice, I mean, I put it in the bunker and then had to try and carry the water, which I didn't manage.
Yeah, it's a tough shot that, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's definitely a few holes where in hindsight I might go back and, you know, play slightly different. But yeah, no, it was enjoyable. You know, that was my biggest takeaway, was that I come away, you know, feeling like I would definitely go back and I'd like to have another crack at it. And the whole facility is there, to be honest, like you said, the range. So I know that you had the big opening event, but it was open and I was able to use a TrackMan when I popped in there and hit a few balls. And that's, you know, I mean, you can tell it's new. You can tell it's been well put together. You can tell that they've spent a bit of money. And I think it'll be a nice addition for the members, because there's for a hotel, like a, you know, a stay and play venue, as I would see it, and I think a lot of people would see it. I was told by the chap in the pro shop that there's actually, you know, nearly 600 members there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, that's a lot. So yeah, so it'd be nice for the members. It's it's nice. I was impressed with it.
No, it's good. I mean, when I first moved to Leeds, that's where I worked, and you know, I really did like the golf course then. I mean, it was De Vere at that time, and I think potentially had a bit more money spent on it then. I mean, the hotel had just, like, some of it had been refurbed, all that, like, the sort of public areas in the hotel are lovely, aren't they? Like the bar and the kind of drawing room and the library that's there that you can sit in, and yeah, that all looks great. The restaurant, the Calvary Grill restaurant, had just been done. The Claret Jug was being built when I first started working there, and yeah, it's great. So you've obviously got the more traditional element down in the hotel, in the Calvary Grill, but then when you go up to the clubhouse, the Claret Jug's a little bit more kind of modern.
Yeah,
but yeah, really good. And
I mean, there was lots of people sitting outside on the balcony, you know, having their post-round drink and food, which is good to see.
And it's a really good, like, vantage point there, isn't it? Because you can
see
straight over the, like, 10th tee and 18th green, and it's a really good 18th hole, that, isn't it? For a bit of kind of drama and theatre as you finish your round, it's very, very good. To be honest, the last three holes on that 1 to 18 are very good, so 16, 17, 18, really tough tee shots on all three of them, and they're difficult holes to par, really. Yeah, so I think the layout is very, very good. I think sometimes when I've played there, the condition hasn't been amazing, but I think the layout has got the promise to be very, very good.
Yeah.
And some of those holes on 19 to 27 are great.
Yeah, I mean, look, they had the Clutch Pro Tour there. They've got the 2020 Pro Tour there.
Yeah.
So they're obviously attracting these, you know, these. You know, good events. I'd agree with you about the condition. You know, some of the tee boxes needed a bit of work. But what I'd also say is they were, you know, I teed off on two mats, for example, on par fours,
yes,
which I know, you know, some people would, you know, would ruin their life. But, you know, for me, the reason that I teed off on mats is because they're trying to make improvements on the golf course.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can never knock a golf course for trying to make improvements.
Yeah.
If it means that you've got to tee off on a mat for a few weeks or a month or so, then so be it. If it's gonna make it a better golf course and, you know, future proof it, and
I mean that it is good that they're doing that. Yeah. If that's yeah, if they're trying to improve the golf course. And you've got to appreciate as well that, like, hotel venues like that get some serious hammer. I mean, there's so many people play the golf course all the time. It's not like your local private members club that might get 20,000 rounds a year played on it. You're talking 100,000 rounds that get played on courses like this. So it's very, very different. The amount of, you know, bodies walking across the golf course, the amount of buggies driving across it, all that kind of stuff. So to some extent, it's very difficult to get golf courses in that kind of condition as well when they're getting that much hammer, really. So it's very difficult. But like I say, I always enjoy playing there. It's literally 500 yards from my house. So it's a very, a very amenable place to go to. I take my daughter to the range there, and she absolutely loves it now that they've put the TrackMan in there, because you can play the games that it's got on there, and even play golf courses on there, can't you? You know, you can book a bay and play around at different golf courses and stuff. So yeah, it's absolutely great being able to do that and use all the features of TrackMan. Those of you that watch our YouTube content know that I use TrackMan myself at the club at Howley, and it's basically just like having that straight away and being able to hit balls outside. It's fantastic. So yeah, thoroughly recommend us doing that. I actually spoke to a chap called Keith Pickard, who's basically in charge of everything golf at Q Hotels, and he's actually going to come on the podcast in a couple of weeks' time and talk to us a little bit about Q Hotels and also kind of the tournaments you've just mentioned. So the Clutch events, Challenge Tour events that they're planning on having as well. So yeah, hopefully we're going to get a good insight from him as to the investment that's gone in. It's about £500,000 at Alton Hall that's gone in there for the golf and the range. So yeah, that queue are spending some money on their golf venues and wanting to improve them. And like you say, you can't knock that at all. So, yeah, we should be hearing from Keith very, very soon. So that'll be a good interview.
Just back to the US Open.
Yeah.
By the way, Rory has just teed up.
I've just seen him unleash an absolute exocet down the first.
Right. 382 yards. He's got 214 yards for a second shot into a 594-yard par 5.
Oh, they've just shown the tee shots up there all day, and that's the longest, about 10, 15 yards.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I mean, that's a long way.
Yeah. Especially and like, it looks, I'm looking at, do you know, I'm looking at them flags as well, and it's not downwind.
Kepka and Matsuyama are pitching out the bunker, aren't they? I think both of them pulled it in the left bunker, didn't they?
Did they? I didn't see those.
But yeah, Rory's. Well, I'll tell you what.
What do you think?
On a podcast, this isn't it? It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Literally watching Rory now, staring the shot down, just about to address it. Like you say,
wind off the right. So they say it's a
216. Yeah, to the hole, which is like you say, that drive is unbelievable.
This will give us an indication,
like you were saying about the sort of skyline behind it. Almost reminds you of Dubai a little bit, doesn't it, with the buildings behind? But a massive high draw. He's leaning like he's just pushed it a little bit, but it's on the front and running. Yeah, I mean, it's a maybe not as close as he'd have liked it from where he was, but he's kind of 40 feet under the hole. Got a putt for an eagle on the first, so yeah. Be a nice start for him. Definitely.
I'm surprised we haven't seen. I think we've only seen one eagle.
Oh really?
There today. I'm surprised that because you know it's not. I think it's quite an inviting pin position, isn't it? To kind of sling one in from right to left
on the TV as well with Rory and Brooks in majors since 2015. They're both combined 156 under par for par fives. It's just nuts.
No way, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely nuts. But yeah, I mean, back to the conversation we were having. We're probably going to interrupt with some more US Open content before we finish. But yeah, Alton's always been somewhere that I've enjoyed going to. I remember as a kid caddying for my dad around there. The Leeds Cup used to be there every year, and it's I used to come up. We used to stay in a little B&B just in Garforth, and just travel to the course every day. And it was tough. They used to play it like a weird combination there, to be honest. So I don't know if you remember the course much, Matt, but so the first hole on 1-18 was kind of, so the almost
off the back of the car park, isn't it?
Yeah. So that would have been like the fourth hole in the tournament. So they used to play the 10th, which obviously tee off straight outside the clubhouse.
Yeah.
11, which is the par 3, and then 12, which is par 5 around the corner, right?
Yeah.
So you play those three and then walk through the car park to what is the first and play that as your fourth.
Yeah.
And then the hole that's on the right of that, the fifth, you'd play that next. So you wouldn't play the second, third or fourth hole as it is. And then they didn't used to play that par 3 and then used to play that par 5 that runs down where all the new housing development is.
Yes.
There. They used to play that as a par 4 and then walk straight through the back of the green and play 16, 17, 18 as it is, as your 9, and then play 19 to 27 as the other 9. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a combination of that 18 holes. And then
if you're able to get away with that sort of thing to kind of keep things fresh and whatnot.
I mean, it used to be a really good layout, but yeah, I mean, to have the ability to do that on a golf course. I mean, the first week I started working there, we had a Euro Pro Tour event, and it was at the time when Euro Pro was still massive, do you know what I mean? And there was loads of people playing, and it was a really good event, and I just remember it being ridiculously busy, and there were so many good players playing there, and it was a fantastic sort of event to see how those guys went about playing that golf course. But yeah, it's great that they're investing in it, and hopefully when we get to speak to Keith we'll see a little bit more. But yeah, keep your eyes peeled because we've got some stuff coming up with Q Hotels, with some sort of resort reviews that we're doing for them and with them over the next few months, where me and Tom are visiting a few of their venues and hopefully doing some resort style sort of content for them as well. So yeah, you should see that on the Golf Shit YouTube channel very soon. So Matt, that's kind of everything we've got to talk about this week, really, mate. Let's talk ahead of what we're going to do in the next 7 days. And what have you got planned golf-wise? You said about tomorrow, you've got your 36 holer.
Yeah, so I've got 36 holes at Aubrey tomorrow. So that's in a lot of the online rankings, it ranks as the number one course in Suffolk. It's personally maybe two or three for me. But it's going to be a demanding and challenging test. I know I'm going to make some bogeys. I like going to play in these sort of events because I find out a little bit more about myself. And then I've just got games booked on Saturday and Sunday as usual at Stowmarket. So, but my events now start to come thick and fast. So I've actually got another county opening 2 weeks today. And then the following week from that is club championship. So yeah, within the next kind of 3 weeks, it's 3 or 4 weeks. It's all happening, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've got an event end of next week. So I've got quite a few days in the shop next week, actually. So it's a bit more of a tamer one for me, but one of my staff is away. So I'm having to cover the shop Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but then Thursday and Friday. So Wednesday night, I'll be driving over to Anglesey in North Wales. So I've got a tournament at Holyhead Golf Club on Thursday and Friday, which played in the event last year. It was absolutely amazing. Good golf course, very, very tough. And I think in these bouncy conditions, it'll be even tougher. So, I mean, it's one that you can score around, don't get me wrong, but it's one that if you're hitting it a bit all over the place off the tee, you're going to really struggle. So, really looking forward to getting back in competition and hopefully putting two decent scores together, because the prize fund's pretty good for the event as well. So playing with a group of guys that I played with last year in it as well, that asked me to play with them again this year. So obviously didn't do too badly, make too bad an impression. But yeah, fingers crossed, we should be all right there. And the following week, I'm on holiday, Matt. And I can't
go on.
So 26th, I'm heading to Portugal, which is unheard of for me to go on holiday with my family, but I am. So I've got my little girl and little boy so excited about going. And yeah, my dad's got a little place over there near, not far from Penina Golf Club, but any of you have been down there in Portugal. But so we're going there for a week for lots of super bock and hopefully swimming in the pool with the kids. So yeah, it should
Love
be
it.
Awesome. So yeah, I've got quite a bit coming up, but obviously we'll be back next week with a bit of a roundup of what's going on in the US Open and a look ahead to what's going on in the world of golf the week after as well. So from me and Matt, we'll see you all very, very soon.
Enjoy.